Southeast Asian nation of Myanmar is on the brink of becoming a failed state. For 3 years, the nation of 54 million people has been embroiled in an escalating civil war between the military junta and hundreds of pro-democracy militias, ethnic armies, and local defense forces. Civilians are suffering. The United Nations estimates that more than 18.5 million people desperately need humanitarian assistance. Thousands are fleeing the country. A 2021 military coup brought to an abrupt end Myanmar's move toward democracy. The widespread peaceful protests that followed were put down by the junta with a brutal crackdown. Scores of opposition protesters fled the cities for the mountainous jungles that make up much of the country. Pro-democracy militias and armed ethnic groups united with the common goal of overthrowing the junta. Last month, rebel forces took control of a key economic hub that was responsible for $1 billion in trade last year. It's among the latest in a long line of junta defeats over the last 6 months that has left resistance groups in control of a significant part of the country. Earlier, I spoke with Burmese American journalist Aim Min Tant about the current situation in Myanmar.
Fighting has really escalated in Myanmar since October of 2023, where Myanmar saw large resistance forces really coalesce and form an allyship and launch a coordinated attack against the military on multiple fronts. And since then, major gains were made, especially along the border regions, along major trade routes, and in several cases, trade towns and trade routes were able to be shut down. Although the military has regained control of some of these areas, they have been dramatically weakened.
Who are these groups that are fighting the junta military? Who are they and what do they want?
So there's various groups that are fighting the military. There are what are called ethnic armed organizations, which are made of ethnic groups that were essentially thrown into the country of Myanmar together for the first time through British colonization, but really have a long history of being individual political entities and have been fighting for independence in some cases, or more legal rights in other cases, and in some cases, just complete separation from the country of Myanmar proper. And in addition to that, there are also multiple groups that have come to being since the coup, mostly made out of farmers and students and other young people from the ethnic majority group who, since the coup, have turned towards violent revolution as a way to negate the effects of the coup and try to turn the country back towards democracy.
Is there enough common ground among these groups beyond just defeating the military junta that if they were to prevail, they'd be able to establish a government?
Right now, there is a common enemy in the military, but it's unclear that if the military were to fall tomorrow, that these groups would be able to coalesce into a formal government or even some sort of interim government in order to lead the country back into a unified whole. On one hand, there is a civilian shadow government that has formed since the coup, but they don't necessarily have the buy-in of a number of ethnic groups and ethnic organizations that felt that their parties, even when the civilian government was in control, that they really respected and saw various ethnic groups as their equals.
So this fighting's been going on for about 3 years. What's been the effect on the civilian population?
The UN Refugee Agency estimates that over 2.5 million people have now been displaced internally in the country since the beginning of the coup, and over 100,000 people have been displaced into neighboring countries. And that's, of course, not counting nearly 1 million Rohingya refugees who were displaced in previous waves of military violence.
How much support are the displaced people, not only within Myanmar, but who fled Myanmar? How much support are they getting?
So various humanitarian organizations are trying to still function in Myanmar and distribute aid. Unfortunately, in order for them to operate, they are forced to essentially collaborate with the military. And in many cases, the military prevents these organizations from being able to go to certain areas, citing security concerns, to distribute aid. The surrounding countries, Thailand, India, Laos, and China, don't provide very much aid to refugees, if any at all. Thailand does not recognize refugees as a class. The same holds true largely in India as well, where the Modi administration is not happy with the amount of refugees that are coming into the country. Bangladesh has really closed its borders as much as it can to additional refugees from Myanmar. And the border along Laos and China has also been really on guard since COVID and has largely not been trying to accept refugees as well.
The United Nations has described the human rights situation in Myanmar as a never-ending nightmare. Who's committing these? Are these one side or the other that's committing these human rights violations?
So according to monitoring organizations, the vast, vast majority of human rights abuses are being committed by the military. The military is engaging in extrajudicial killings. Over 50,000 people have been killed since the coup, either through torture, extrajudicial killings, airstrikes, war, arson. The military also engages in airstrikes on largely protected places like schools, hospitals, and religious sites. There's a weaponization of arson, burning down of entire villages, rape as a weapon of war. And lately, we're also seeing a lot of forced recruitment by the military. On the other hand, we are also seeing human rights abuses from the resistance side. There have been reports of extrajudicial killings, especially of people who have been accused of being informants for the militaries, or people who are seen as collaborators who are not necessarily armed combatants.
What's the road ahead look like? Is it possible that one side or another could prevail, or is this just going to be a deadlock?
So the fighting has been going on for 3 years, but we've really seen a lot of big moves in the last 6 months. Despite the fact that the conscription law has existed for many years at this point, this is the first time in history that it's being used. And analysts have taken this as a sign that this means that the military is quite desperate to try to fill its ranks, especially as they're starting to lose more and more battles. So what started off as largely, you know, young, untrained people, many of whom grew up in cities and have never touched a weapon, or people who were largely farmers using homemade weapons and commercial drones, have now turned into pretty battle-hardened troops who have gotten their hands onto military weaponry.
Amin Tant, thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.